This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L.
What
kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck, wasn't that
his name? Bismarck.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
doing. Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero. Coming at you live here on this Monday evening. And it feels kind of funny. Feels kind of weird. We're back inside that vintage vault for the first time in, I think, forever. Right, Scott Criscola? It's been quite a while.
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Yeah, I mean, we're talking a month? 4 weeks? Almost?
It might be even longer than that.
Let's see.
It's been a while.
We did Armageddon 2002, which was episode 322. We did on July 7th.
Okay. Yep. So just about a month.
Just about a month. And we went through some Raw watches. We, of course, sat with Kevin Kelly to talk about those last 6 months of 2002, which means, besides the end of the line for Kevin Kelly, is a new year. And maybe... JR, one of the most transitional years of the new era.
Hey, what is going on here?
By the way, that is recorded for Stephen Sutton's purposes because he finally took a vacation, but we didn't want to like wreck the boat. This might be 2003, might be the first transitional year. I always compare it to 1995, except not as bad.
Right.
Depending on your point of view. But tonight, we open the year in Beantown, but blown up in Beantown.
30 men in all, 15 from Raw, 15 from SmackDown. The winner of the Royal Rumble will meet his champion, his brand's champion, in the main event at WrestleMania.
The road to WrestleMania begins tonight.
Tonight, if I can win the Royal Rumble, that means I go and have a title shot at WrestleMania.
Tonight is so important to me because it gives me the opportunity to headline WrestleMania as the WWE champion.
Being a part of WrestleMania, to me, is the reason I'm in this business.
WrestleMania is the greatest sporting event of all time.
The Super Bowl of the WWE.
It's what I wake up thinking about. It's what I go to bed thinking about.
Once a superstar from the WWE is in the main event of WrestleMania, you want it over and over and over again.
That's the ultimate dream, is that bell rings and you're standing across the ring looking at another guy, and you guys are the main event, the biggest event that there is. It couldn't mean anymore.
Tonight at the Royal Rumble, Big Papa Pump, Freakzilla, gets a chance to prove that he belongs in the main event at WrestleMania.
That's my all-time ultimate.
starts tonight.
Booker kind of had a dusty thing going on there.
Yes.
Gotta head into the Rumble, head over to WrestleMania. I'll be right back.
WrestleMania, baby.
I'll be back in a few minutes. Thanks.
Yeah. And of course, everybody had a very, like, very philosophical, very deep meaning. And then Steiner, of course, goes, yeah, Freakzilla's going to do it. Yeah.
Freakzilla's going to bang your wife. I'll be back later.
Yeah. Harbinger of things to come there. Tonight, on episode 325 of the Place to Be podcast, the Vintage Vault brings you the 2003 Royal Rumble. Yes, that one.
Mm-hmm.
A show, I might add, attended to by the Silverback himself. Oh, Mr. Matt Rotellis was at the Fleet Center that night. January 19th.
I should mention our friend and listener, Patrick Maloney, was also there. We have some notes we're going to read at the end here from him. So.
Oh, okay, good. Well, it's nice to have a Place to Be Nation contingents at these shows. Yeah, this is an up and down. I've been looking forward to these first few shows, JR, because we are coming up on, it's actually a very memorable series of vaults.
Well, there's a handful of good ones throughout 2003. I mean, it's a shaky year, but there's some good stuff in here. It's not an abysmal year on paper.
No, it's not.
There's some weird stuff and a lot of change. We say goodbye to a lot of people and hello to others, but it's there's some good shows mixed in here. They definitely are. Towards the end of the year, it gets a little hectic, but and a little shaky. But through the first like 7 months, I'd say we get a few decent shows to talk about.
Yeah, no, we do, and you know, and of course, in two more vaults, we will have a personal favorite of yours and mine, and probably what many consider the official end of the Attitude Era. But we'll get there. January 19th, 2003, live from the Fleet Center in Boston, Massachusetts. We, of course, have already been here, so we don't have to go through the history.
Was WrestleMania 14 the last time?
I'm just thinking now. I believe you're right. Mm-hmm. No, 2000 King of the Ring.
Oh, right.
2000 King of... Yeah. So, let's see what happens there. Your attendance, pretty badass, 15,338. Your buy rate, 0.99. That's actually not bad, JR. It's pretty good, actually. Your announcers, of course, Raw, sitting out in the rain, Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. And at ringside from SmackDown, of course, Michael Cole and Taz.
Show also, Scott, sponsored by PlayStation 2. Our theme song was Falling Apart by Trust Company. Mm-hmm. And here's your champion roll call as we go through Steven Sutton's case notes. Big ups to him. WWE champions, Kurt Angle. Our world champion, Triple H. World tag team champions are new. We have Lance Storm and William Regal have won since they were in that multi-man match at Armageddon. They defeated Booker T and Goldust on the January 6th Raw from American Airlines Arena in Phoenix. The Guerreros are still the tag team champions on SmackDown. Billy Kidman and his fleas, still the Cruiserweight champ. And Victoria is still your women's champion. We've had one death in the world of wrestling, Scott. It was the original Sheik, Ed Farhat. Died on January 18th at age 78.
Sadly, will not be the last one in 2003. So,
all right, we have some milestones here. Raw had surpassed 503 episodes and also celebrated its 10th anniversary. There would be an awards ceremony at the World. I believe it was right after the show, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Is they had all the different awards, and they had Diva of the Decade, Don't Try This at Home, and a whole bunch of other there. SmackDown hit episode 179, Velocity 35, Heat 230. TNA's Weekly now up to 28 pay-per-views, and Explosion 15 episodes.
230 Heats?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, it started in, what, 98?
Yeah. It's pretty good, 230.
Speaking of Heat, on the international standard Heat was Rico defeated Tommy Dreamer, Jamal defeated Johnny Stamboli, and Spike Dudley defeated Christian by disqualification. On the pay-per-view Heat that we saw, Spike Dudley defeated Steven Richards. Rey Mysterio made his TV return on January 16th. If you remember, he had the knee injury that was put out of the action by A-Train back in December, so he's back now. Bull Buchanan, who we see here, be his last show. We can talk about him a little bit later, as well as a guy we do not see is Raven. Overall record, 278 matches, Scott. You have a guess?
278 all-time matches?
No, this is 2000 to 2003. Yeah, 278 matches in the WWF.
Jesus.
Since he came back in September 2000.
All right, I'm not going to try and split them in half. I'll just pick number of wins. 180.
100 wins, 175 losses, and 3 draws.
Jesus.
His last match was against Jeff Hardy on the January 13th Raw at Mohegan Sun.
And let's see, we got a couple debuts. We'll get to those later. So that's it for now.
Okay. And of course, he will debut in. Well, he'll head to Ring of Honor.
Yes.
After this, because I remember him both on the Year 2 DVD, and he wrestles Punk a lot in 2003. Or is that 2005? No, it's 2000.
I think it's later. I think he goes
to
TNA.
No, it's 2005. 2003, he goes to TNA because he feuds with...
he has a big feud with Jarrett, and so, they built that really big match. I remember Mark Clare and I ordered the pay-per-view. We were all excited for it. In, I think it's in June, and they screwed him. He didn't win the title. First sign of trouble to come for TNA. But I remember being really excited for that show.
I think I have it. I think it's on this Jarrett set that I have, that King of the Mountain set.
Probably.
There's like four Jarrett Raven matches on that set. So.
And that was the big one. I think it was in June. Was his big title match after all the build. So.
In 2003, I don't want to not to totally go off topic, but 2003 actually, because I watched that whole set. 2003 was actually not a bad year for Jarrett in terms of in-ring. His matches actually weren't bad. Huh. He wrestled AJ a few times when they had that Scumbag Incorporated, whatever the Sleaze Incorporated, whatever Russo's faction was.
SCX.
SCX or whatever, yeah. Yeah, he had some good matches. But anyway, all right. Let's dive in.
Yeah, look of the company is slowly starting to morph a little bit. We saw a lot of it in 02, but you see more of it here. So.
Yes, yeah, you're seeing a sign that they're... starting to take advantage of their roster acquisitions and taking advantage of their the youth on the roster. Very transitional year here, 2003. And like JR said, got a lot of high points, but as we see on this show, has a lower too. All right, our first match actually correlates to the Royal Rumble main event later on in the evening, as this is a battle for the 30th slot. 29 slots have been set. A 30th slot was up for grabs here, JR. And it was a rematch from a match you saw live at Madison Square Garden. And that is, of course, the Big Show, no longer a WWE champion, as he lost the title at Armageddon to Kurt Angle because of this guy who cost Big Show the title because Big Show beat him at the Survivor Series for the title. And that is Brock Lesnar. And... what do you think of his, at this point, before we really delve into the match? I paid a lot of attention to crowd today when I was watching it. I paid a lot of attention to crowd energy because obviously it has its peaks and it most certainly has its valleys. What do you think of his pop? Do you think he was still pretty hot as a face?
Yeah, I do. I thought the crowd was pretty good the whole night here. I mean, I know there's one match where they caused some trouble, but overall, I thought they stayed pretty into the show from start to end. And they had a lot of Brock Lesnar to come.
Yes.
Because this match was to determine who would enter the Rumble out of these two, getting at spot number 30. So the night after Armageddon, Kurt Angle had dodged Brock Lesnar's challenge for the championship match by saying he had a non-title match with Chris Benoit. He did offer him a match the following week, and Brock accepted. Later that night, Angle came out and introduced Paul Heyman as his advisor, much to the shock of the announcer and fans. A confused Big Show came out, but Heyman talked him into believing his mission, and a new power trio had been formed. Show interfered in Angle's match with Benoit, and Brock made the save. He tossed Show and Angle with suplexes, but before he could get a stance on Heyman, Angle took him out and left him lying. The next week, Show opened with Stephanie McMahon announcing that Brock injured Angle after last week's show went off the air and that Angle may now be out to the pay-per-view. Show came out and demanded the title shot at the Rumble, but Stephanie put him in a number one contender match with Chris Benoit instead. Later in the show, Stephanie showed the footage of Brock injuring Angle's knee from the week before. This was to cover for legit injuries that Kurt had been battling through, including his knee and neck, which we talked about with Kevin last week. After that, Angle and Heyman came out to chat. Angle said he would never defend his title against Brock despite promises before Armageddon. Show would lose the match to Benoit to close out the episode of SmackDown. The following week, Heyman and Show came out, and Heyman talked about wanting to ensure Lesnar would not win the Rumble, so he officially challenged Brock to take on Show, with the winner getting the slot in the Rumble match. Brock accepted, and the match was set. Scott, what did you think of Angle going heel with Heyman? Because I remember at first it seemed kind of funny because Angle's such a strong talker. It seemed like an odd pairing. Did you think it fit?
You know, it's funny. I'm thinking about that as you were going over the fun fact. I was thinking of that because I had a feeling that was the first question you were going to ask. I had no issue with it. It's funny how this feud between Brock and Kurt would meander up and down for the next, 10 months. I liked Angle and Heyman together. It was unique. It was different. You needed to give Angle some type of heel because he was getting some serious face pops throughout the last month and a half of 2002. Even though that's not really the way they were headed. Anytime a babyface needs cheating to win, you know that there's a heel turn in the works. And I thought about that when Brock helped Kurt win at Armageddon.
Right. I like that swerve of it, you know?
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty well done.
Yeah.
They used Heyman. They got Brock to help Angle win. I promised him the titles match and then screwed him. Mm-hmm. I thought the only one who looked dumb at all this was Big Show. It's
like, wow, yeah. What a shock.
Yeah, I know, right? And now he's, yeah. Okay. You know, he just kind of apologizes to Heyman.
Yeah,
abused relationship. So, yeah, continuation of the Heyman feud here. Show still featured, but kind of takes a step back, which was fine. He had his run with the title, and I think that was enough. Brock's first match since the injury and high expectations for the night for him. Brock busts out some good power moves right away, mm-hmm. Some nice belly-to-bellies. And these guys always had good chemistry. That we've seen it at Survivor Series. We see it here, and we'll see it throughout the course of the year as well. Big Show choke tosses Brock over the top to the floor. I thought it was a pretty nutty bump for Brock to take coming off that injury. He really went sailing over the top and hard to the floor.
Yeah.
I thought Cole did a nice job calling back all the history between these guys and the Heyman stuff for this match. I thought he was strong here. Brock gets his hands on Heyman, but his obsession almost costs him again. Brock fights off Show and hits the F5 for a nice finish. I thought these guys had a really good pace. It was a short match. It was only, 6:29, so a little bit longer than Survivor Series. But they had a really good pace. I liked the opener, and they told a good story, and I thought it was a good way to set the tone for the night.
I loved, and I mentioned it to you today, I loved Taz and Cole settling in. Because now we get the consistent Brock, consistent Taz. Every time you hear the wah, 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 the beginning of Brock's music, you hear Taz go, "Here comes the pain."
Yeah,
every time you hear it on the show, on the pay per views.
That's why too. I think the brand split is really starting to settle in because you started getting those familiarities. All right, Brock.
Yeah,
he's a SmackDown guy. We know all the calls for him. We know the story. It was nice to get that familiarity where these are the SmackDown guys. And the commentators know how to put these guys over. Like it really gave you that familiarity with on Friday nights, these are the guys I'm watching, or Thursday nights, these are the guys I'm watching, and these are the commentators, this is the story. You know, it was kind of nice to have that. And I think it did work for the original intent, which was to make it seem like separate shows, to not have guys be burnt out or overkill on TV. So you only saw Triple H once a week. We only saw Undertaker once a week. So I thought that was good, too, because you weren't getting that burnout of having multiple stories twice a week. So it almost did feel like two companies, I think, for a while here. I think the next few years was the most separation we ever get with the brand split.
Yeah, I agree, definitely.
From here until 05. I think around 06, 07, we started to get more blending. But I think 03, 04, and into 05, we really start to get those brand lines solidified.
I think even 06 is very brand split heavy.
I think you're right. I think it's until ECW came in. So I think like mid-06.
Mid to late 06 is when it starts to... And then, of course...
07, we go back to the brand.
Yeah, I think it's No Way Out 07 is the last time it's technically branded as a brand only show, but we'll get there. The other cool line was I just love when Taz just invents things. He's like, "This is gonna be a rocket buster."
Yeah, no, he was really good here. I mean, him and Cole were really fantastic. Really, one of my favorite teams of all time really at this stretch. They were really good, and they were the perfect fit for the SmackDown style. I thought
gonna be a rocket buster off the chain. You see, he lets his Brooklynese come out big time with this. But Cole is, I mean, as a play-by-play guy, he finally, I think, has understood how different he needs to be from JR at this point. I gotta say, he's not any worse. I know you're gonna get mad at this, but I can't see right now. He's not worse. He's not quite exactly better yet, but he's not worse than Vince mid-90s.
Oh, I don't think he's close to Vince.
He's no worse than Vince. I don't think he's gotten better than Vince, but he's no worse than like 90 Vince or 89 Vince, but maybe 89 Schiavone. But he's definitely settled into a style that he would obviously enhance over the coming 10 years. As for the match, you're right. I love the power moves. Brock has a formula he likes to use. And it was just unique. It was a different kind of match for him. He never gets long matches with Big Show. He will face Big Show again on pay-per-view later in the year. But definitely, Brock definitely showcased himself. And they obviously had to give him a short match because he was going to be back out in like an hour and a half or whatever. I was fine with it. Brock winning. No surprise there, obviously. Did they say it was number 30? I don't remember them saying it was,
no,
he was number 30. I think they just said
30th
it's a slot.
Entrant. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was a fine opener. Mm-hmm. I think the crowd was pumped for him. I think Big Show, you're right. I think he had his little moment, and now he's kind of back to, you know, meandering around and doing his thing and being used when needed.
Okay.
Let's move
on. A lot of time spent on that opener.
Yeah, Brock Lesnar is in. Yes, Brock Lesnar is in the Royal Rumble. All right, next we have our first title match of the evening. The World Tag Team Championships, a.k.a. the Red Belts, are on the line. And now we actually debut the Red Belts, because I believe, I don't remember if they had switched in December. I'm trying to remember Armageddon now. Do they have the new tag belts? I think they still have the old tag belts in December. Yeah, I think they did. I think this pay-per-view they debut the new Raw tag team titles, which, of course, are, as mentioned, the Red Belts, as the SmackDowns are called the Blue Belts. Your champions, as JR mentioned in the Sutton Report, an awesome little team that wrestled at Armageddon, the team of Lance Storm and William Regal. Regal with his awesome blue-red combo tights.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Storm always in his Canadian red. Won the titles on, what was it, January 6th?
Yes.
Taking on the Dudleys, who reunited at Survivor Series, and then had that weird kind of eliminated pseudo quickly in that four-way at Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
Surprised by the title shot here?
No, because there was a reason for it. Regal and Storm had defeated Booker and Goldust on January 6th. Earlier that night, the Dudleys had ran afoul of Eric Bischoff on Raw when they saved Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler from a beating at the hands of 3 Minute Warning. Regal and Storm backed up the Boss and took out the Dudleys. Booker then made some derogatory comments about Eric, so he granted Regal and Storm a title shot, and that's what led to the title change. On November 18th, Val Venus came out, but announced he now had a new name, and it was his real name, Sean Morley. Eric Bischoff named him his chief of staff, and now became Eric's right-hand man on Raw. Morley would assist Regal and Storm in their title win on January 6th. So we now have Chief Morley running a point for Bischoff, which I thought was a good switch. I mean, he's a good hand. He's a veteran. He should stick around. And he needed a new name and look, get away from Val for a bit.
Yeah, I agree. He needed a change in.
And he's a strong talker. And you know, if you really know the real Sean Morley, you know he's very opinionated. So
yes,
it fit well. I agree. So Dudleys are back in the title picture. Crowd seemed happy to have them back. Storm and Regal had ended a very brief Booker Goldust short reign, like we talked about. And I think it was because Booker was being moved on to bigger things. It felt like after all that, they only had the belts for like a month. But I think they had bigger plans for Booker here heading into 2003, and I think these guys were a good choice to make champions.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed the match a lot. It felt like a glorified squash match. Was just under 7.5 minutes. I feel like the Dudleys dominated the action.
Mm. A lot of basic tag work. I thought it was a really good execution by Storm and Regal, and I thought they were the perfect blend of a heel team. I thought they worked really well together. I think it was a good pairing.
Yeah,
Dudleys close in on the win, but Morley gets involved, like we mentioned. And Devon gets the win with the Nux, would lead to a dusty finish the next night, I believe, right? Didn't they put over Morley the next night? I think so. I guess we'll cover that next month. But
yeah, I thought they did get a Dixie a switcheroo there. I think you're right.
Yeah, so the Dudleys, when they leave here, they are tag team champions. It was an okay match. Basic stuff, had some good heat. Nothing
crazy.
Special.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. But it was fun, though. It was a fun match, and crowd was pretty hot for them. So, incidentally, JR, I was trying to wrap my head around this today while watching it. Did they have some kind of effect in the arena where it was actually raining?
For?
On the set. Because remember kind of the basis of the set was like the driving rainstorm, the graphics and everything?
Oh, maybe.
And there's a camera. If you look closely, there was a camera to the left of the ramp that always looked wet, like there were raindrops on the lens. So I thought to myself,
oh, I did notice that, yeah.
Was that like, because there was a big screen. Because if you remember, the set was kind of cockeyed. It wasn't directly in the middle. It was kind of off to the right. And the left had this huge screen that had the Royal Rumble logo and all that rain, you know, like the rain graphic or whatever, the animation. And there was one shot of this camera, and it always looked like it was wet. So I was wondering, did they do like some kind of weird like indoor singing in the – because I've been to an indoor adaptation of Singing in the Rain, a Broadway show. Off Broadway, and it rained. They had it rain. What's that?
It's okay, John Sterling.
I went inside, and I'll tell you, Susan, the pop up by Gardner,
it actually rained inside, so it was kind of cool. So I was always curious, like if there was some type of effect in the building, where...
No, John, how much were the tickets?
Good night, Kathy. See you tomorrow.
Good night, darling. Take care of that throat. You're a big singing star now, remember? This
Take care of that throat, Criscolo.
What you do is just a little heavier than usual tonight.
Really? From where I stand, the sun is shining all over the place.
I tell you, Susan, these tickets are really expensive.
All right. Singing in the rain, just singing in the rain.
Hills Aylesbury. That's fun.
Anyway, I just found that I was because I've seen, I mean, we've watched the show, you know, a few times, and every time that camera comes up, I always wonder, you know, why is the lens wet? And they're, you know, weird. All right. In any event, the Dudley Boys are your new.
So I don't know if it was a dusty finish or not. I mean, it looks like they win it back the next night at the very least. So we'll cover that on our way out. But
okay. So at this moment, the Dudley Boys, mm-hmm. once again, world.
It kind of caught me off guard, too. Like, I was waiting for some screwy because Devon uses the Nux, and I kind of was waiting for the dusty finish. I was surprised that they ended Regal and Storm's reign so quickly, but
yeah, it was really
they
weird.
Did.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a very odd, I can't get over that weird camera. Anyway, Dudley Boys are your new world red belt tag team mm-hmm. champions. All right, now we get into the less than stellar portion of our show, these next two matches. All right. At Armageddon, we had the highlight of this feud between Dawn Marie and Tori Wilson, which was the awesome, sexy Cinemax half-lesbian film or movie clip that Dawn Marie had when Tori Wilson went into her hotel room, and she said she really wanted to be with her, and she'd break it off with husband, you know, with Father mm-hmm. Al, and fed strawberries, smelled each other's hair, you know, kissed a little bit, and then she stopped it because Al didn't want to watch it anymore because according to Taz, God, this guy's an ass. So great. Anyway, so Dawn Marie and Al Wilson end up getting married. And then on the honeymoon, after watching this clip today, JR, I was that whole shower scene was incredibly uncomfortable. Of course, they had a night of unbelievable consummating,
mm-hmm.
and Dawn Marie wants a little more late night nookie. There's just one problem: Al's dead, died face down in a satin bed of sin.
Yes, he did.
So,
and then in the highlight, of course, a week later, we go to the funeral home for Al's funeral, and Dawn and Tori are arguing, and they start fighting. They start slapping the coffin tips over. Tori would mourn some more. Dawn slashes a lamp over her back, and the whole thing was ripped on the internet. But the only highlights again were the commentary by Cole and Taz. And
yeah,
I mean, it's like they didn't get enough with Katie Vick. We needed more funeral home antics here. But this was played as such camp that I mean, I was just chuckling when she hits her with the fucking lamp and the casket tips over and everything else. Just a mess. Absurd story. Both women have really thrown themselves into the angle, so I'll give them that. First stepmom versus stepdaughter match until you versus Aurora at WrestleMania 40.
What does that mean? Really?
You like, is it the Julia Roberts movie? That's going to be you, the stepmother or whatever.
Stepmother, yeah. Oh, I look like Diane Keaton. No, that might be your girl Meryl Streep. I'm not sure.
Was she in that?
I think one of those.
Tori finally wins and puts this feud to bed.
Oh, it sucks. Match is 3.5 minutes of shit.
Yeah, the only thing we'll miss is Taz's commentary, just destroying Gal and all this.
Guy was such an ass anyway.
But
she should be mourning Taz. She should be fighting. Her father was an idiot anyway.
The whole thing was a mess.
Oh, his acting was just so. I don't want my daughter seeing this.
The only good thing is they didn't take it seriously in any way. The whole thing was a joke. So I mean, that was the only positive, that they didn't try to push this as something legitimate.
Right.
But thankfully, Al's gone.
Yeah.
And we don't have to see any more pay per view matches. What do we see? Three altogether, or two matches and the. And the hotel skit. Thing,
I
right?
I think they wrestled at No Mercy. Then the hotel skit was Armageddon, and then here. Yeah.
Yep. More than we needed.
All right.
We head backstage, and Eric Bischoff and Stephanie are teasing recruiting Randy Orton, who's recovering from injury.
Vince had given Bischoff 30 days to shake up Raw or get fired. Stephanie wishes him well, and Bischoff teases a huge bombshell to come. So already Bischoff on thin ice. He had just debuted in July. Vince is already annoyed with him. And this was weird stuff because Vince came on TV and like basically admitted that the show sucked and Eric had to shake it up and make it better. So it was odd, you know. It was almost admitting that Raw had been kind of shaky lately. So it was kind of a weird direction to take things. But we'll see what happens between here and No Way Out, which will be the 30 days for Bischoff to turn the show around.
Very awkward acting though. It's like Stephanie and Bischoff, just I don't know, they never had they sounded scripted.
I thought they were okay.
I don't know, I always felt their acting was a little awkward when they were together. But Stephanie looking quite good. She actually starts looking great. 2003 might, next to like 2000, 2003 might be her best looking year.
I don't know, once she gets the bangs and everything later in the year.
Oh, I love the bangs.
Really?
I think the bangs are awesome. Yeah, I think the bangs are awesome.
I like I would say 2000 Stephanie followed by 2014 Stephanie in my rankings.
I do like 2014 Nikki Bella. Anyway, so they have their skit and, you know, big bombshells, things happening, big things popping, blah, blah, blah. So
something else I thought was weird, too. We get a vignette for Sean O'Hare and Nathan Jones. A couple guys we'll talk about over the coming weeks. Rare that you see that. We don't usually see that on pay-per-view. I mean, it was cool to showcase them, but usually it was just a TV thing.
Well, you obviously watched it on the network.
Yeah.
At the beginning of that clip, I had no idea what the hell it was. I totally forgot it was Nathan Jones. Like, what the hell is this? Like, is this like a movie like trailer or something? Like, what is this? And then they show this big jacked up bald dude's the back of his, you know, back, and I'm like, oh, I know who this is.
Yeah, we'll talk
Nathan
about both of them.
Jones.
But I thought it was interesting to get vignettes on pay-per-view.
I know, really. I like Sean O'Hare. We'll talk more about that character because I thought that character was awesome.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in a few weeks.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Kurt and his.
Time to play the game. It's amazing how you knock me off my feet. Mm-hmm.
I think we got to mix the Bee Gees Ric Flair song to this, too, since we don't get to hear it. He doesn't wrestle anymore. This is company's boy here. You ready? The moment you've been waiting for.
Jesus. We really have to do this.
We'll see how much you'll stand by your man.
All right.
I think that was what Tammy Wynette meant when she wrote that song. Just sitting in some lounge with a cigarette. Someday, there's going to be this guy living in Connecticut. He's going to love this other guy, and he's going to have a really bad match, and the love is going to be on the rocks. And I'm going to sit there and say he's going to stand by his man, Scott. So that's what I expect from you tonight. I expect you to defend your boy and stand by your man in this match.
I will. Well, let's get into it. And,
okay.
All right. The night
borderline
after.
Dud match. Okay.
Okay. Let me go through this.
You sure you want to? Can you handle
it? I can do this.
Okay. If you start to ramble, I'm going to cut you off.
All right. The night after Armageddon, where Triple H won his World Heavyweight Championship back from Shawn Michaels, GM Eric Bischoff held a Triple H Appreciation Night. I paid for the balloons. To honor the new World Heavyweight Champion. During Triple H's speech, God knows it's hard to be humble when you're Triple H. out comes Big Papa Pump himself, Freakzilla, Scott Steiner. Steiner really had not been on either show yet. He was still a free agent. But he wanted a crack at the World Heavyweight title. So Bischoff was, you know, he's on Triple H's side. He's trying to, you know, stall. But Steiner says, no title shot. I'm going to SmackDown. So Triple H said, I'll tell you what, Eric. You give Scott Steiner his title shot at the Royal Rumble. Steiner wanted the match right there, but after going nose to nose, Triple H begs off. Over the next few weeks, Triple H would kind of toy around with Big Papa Pump through various competitions. On the 12/23 Raw, Triple H hosts an arm wrestling contest where Steiner plays possum and then beats him like 8 times in a row. Then the next week on January 6th, we have clearly one of the most visibly uncomfortable segments in Raw history. And that is where Triple H and Scott Steiner have their rude warrior-esque pose down where they're both all oiled up and the lights are real low and nothing out of you. Then the next week, they have a push-ups competition. And while Steiner's doing the push-ups, the judges that Triple H handpicked get up, start beating the shit out of Steiner, and Triple H walks off.
And then Scott woke up.
And then on the 1/13 Raw, they finally come to blows. Steiner rips Triple H's suit apart, leaving him with these very unusual pair of underwear that has no back. That kind of looks like a jock strap. And there you go. So Triple H apparently very vulnerable heading into this match.
So what happened that made him so vulnerable?
I don't know. It was the underwear. Nothing out of you. This is terrible. Can we stop this? Can we move on to something else, please? Kurt's fighting who in the next match?
So what? Did he find those in the back of your closet?
Shut up!
Oh, okay. A lot of weird. I mean, the whole point was to have them not touch, obviously. So that's why I got a lot of the weird build to really build the heat up. And they built it like kind of a dream match. I mean, expectations were pretty high with
what it was.
A decent power match and a strong Steiner showing his first OD match. He thought he'd be ready to go. Hunter's got the red trunks.
Yes, we debut. Hunter goes through his 11-month stretch of really
Valentine's Day
getting in the Ric Flair mode. Hey, those weren't cheap. So he wears the red for this one. I don't think he wears red again, though. And
check a diary.
Before
we get into the match, so okay. Chad Campbell did this for his Vince Vault previewing. If you haven't read that on PlaceMination.com, I highly recommend it because this is a lot more in depth than the usual previewing he does. Really breaks down a lot of psychology and the reasons why he thinks the critics of this match aren't as on point as they think they are. So he gives a pretty different take on why he doesn't defend the match. He still thinks it sucks, but different take on why he thinks it sucks. So the story here is Hunter's being intimidated. Steiner gets a great entrance. I thought he still feels pretty big. I thought it still felt like a cool deal. Like, I don't think his aura had been really damaged yet. I think he still felt like a legit challenger and a star when he came out. So he clubs early, starts to work the lower back. Dominates Triple H. Steiner blocks or no-sells pretty much all the offense. Flair gets involved as Steiner gets broken down a bit and worked over. Steiner comes back with suplexes, and by the time his comeback starts, clearly gassed. Keeps going back to the belly-to-belly suplex, and eventually the crowd turns on him, and that seems to rattle him, Scott. So he seems a little gassed. He's kind of starts to stumble a little bit, goes to like this fourth belly-to-belly, and the crowd just gives up on the match. You know, Chad argues that he didn't think the crowd should have given up, that they gave up prematurely, that the belly-to-bellies were part of the repertoire of Scott Steiner, and I think that's a valid point. I agree with Chad as well that Hunter kind of stopped selling the back randomly, and that was the whole key point to the early in the match.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about this at the end because it seemed like they were going two different directions. They couldn't decide which way to go with the build in this match. So Hunter tries to bump and sell for him, and the crowd is just completely gone. Hunter and Flair try to leave. Steiner stops them. Hunter does this awful blade job, one of the worst I've ever seen, on a terrible belt shot that he blocked with his hands, and then he comes up gushing blood.
Right.
And it was towards the end of the match. Like, it wasn't even really needed. I don't know. It was just a really weird decision to do. I didn't think they needed it at all. So Hunter keeps trying to escape and get himself DQ'd. Earl Hebner won't do it. The whole match is just way too long. We get more suplexes. Hunter uses a sledgehammer and finally gets disqualified. They fight over the sledge. Steiner gets some heat back with it. Puts the recliner on, refuses to release. Bischoff and the referees come out and break it up. And the crowd's just shitting on all of this. I thought it was an awful mess. I thought it was way overbooked and bloated. I think they were attempting a classic that never came. I think the concept for the finish is fine. The issue to me is everything between the open and the close. And I thought to do this kind of finish, Hunter should have a no offense. And this is in my notes. I know Chad agreed, but this is my notes that I took home from the match as well. That
I think everything would look better and Steiner would look more like a threat because they were trying to build to a rematch. And JR even says at the end that Steiner's a favorite in the rematch and there'll be a rematch. And I thought Hunter needed to get no offense to make that really pop. Like, I thought Steiner should have just murdered him from the start and then Hunter gets himself DQ'd. Instead, you kind of get this two-part match. You get Steiner with the focused work on the back, really working him over, and Hunter kind of sells it and then just stops, takes over the middle of the match, and then Steiner gets this big comeback where Hunter can't beat him again. You know what I'm saying? Like, it had to be one or the other. Either build to a regular finish with the recliner in the back or go right into the squash that Steiner's unstoppable monster and Triple H can't beat him and he has to get himself disqualified.
Yeah. I enjoyed the first, like, 9.5 minutes of this match. I did like the brawl. I think there was something to be said for the way that Steiner really put over his move set, how limited it may be. There's a moment that I have that I really paid it, and I actually had Chad's piece open while I was watching it, just kind of go along, see what he thought. And again, folks, we'll talk more about it later. Definitely go to it, placetobenation.com. Fantastic piece Chad did. There's a moment where Hunter goes for a pedigree. Steiner blocks it, hits a catapult. You know, he lifts Steiner up, or he lifts Triple H up, falls back. Triple H hits the top turnbuckle. Then hits him with a, it's kind of like a sidewalk slam, or it's kind of like the slam John Cena does now. It looks like a back suplex, but it's really not. Hunter falls. And then Steiner just kind of leans on the ropes. Now you're thinking to yourself, if you're not accustomed to what's going on, you're thinking, oh, you know, he's taking a beating, he's worn out from the war. But then you're thinking to yourself, he hasn't really gotten hit much. And then Steiner gets this look in his eye, and you could just see the glaze, and you're like, oh, he's screwed. And that's the moment, I think. And the next like 9 minutes of this match is them just kind of sleepwalking. And then of course there's the infamous Tiger Driver where Steiner hits the underhook and then tries to lift Triple H and then they just both collapse. It's a absolute dumpster fire of a spot.
Well, the problem is it's like Hunter's kind of dragging around and half-assed pretending to be afraid, and Steiner's kind of walking in circles, and like he didn't really look menacing at the end. You know what I mean? Like it just kind of looks silly. And Hunter, it wasn't really at his best here at all, and neither guy was. I don't think neither guy was really prepared for this kind of match, and I think they should have been more aware that Steiner may be tired coming off a long layoff in the ring, and he had that foot injury for a while, if you remember, at the end of his WCW days. So I think it's kind of forgotten that he hadn't really been in ring shape. So even though he's physically in great shape, that doesn't mean he can go out there and wrestle for 25 minutes. So I think this needed to be a 12-minute beatdown with a DQ saved by Triple H and then the rematch at No Way Out when Steiner could have a few more matches. Because I know they were trying to build Steiner to not wrestle before the show. I know they were trying to build that up to have him, this to be really special, but I think it almost backfired on them that he didn't get any reps in between when he debuted in this paper.
Yeah, he really didn't. Yeah. But again, I think our problem, and I'm going to continue to discuss this, and I talk about this in detail on the podcast I did with Will and Dylan about Triple H's career. But I'll go in more depth here as we go show by show. 2003, when it came to opponents, Hunter was kind of behind the eight ball because of a pending arrival. This feud, if there was nobody else coming in 2003, this could have been built up to, you know, maybe SummerSlam or WrestleMania. If there was nobody else coming and if there was nothing else on the roster for...
That doesn't excuse him for having a shitty match. The build was fine. This match is poor. Like, the matches being here and No Way Out has nothing to do with who's coming and what's happened. I mean, Steiner didn't have to win the belt to make this feud work.
No, but my point is they could have let Steiner kind of go off on other feuds to kind of build himself up. And then
no, because he's coming
point,
in as a big deal. I'm fine with him using it. The problem is this match was 25 minutes and poorly booked. It had nothing to do with anything else. Steiner was fine for the first half. I mean, if they just had him, if the last 12 minutes of the match was the first 12 minutes, they would have been fine. You didn't need the blood. You just have Steiner unstoppable, and Hunter can't even find an opening, and he's panicked, grabs the chamber, decks him in the face, and you get a cheap DQ, and then you do the rematch and No Way Out. I think that would have been fine. This match just completely derailed Steiner, made him look like a goof at the end.
Yeah.
And
you know, neither guy. It did no one a service. Flair was working the hardest out there and made the most sense with what he was doing. It was kind of sad to watch him bumping around and going crazy for this. I mean, the match is worth watching for the novelty. Like, it's not bad. It's bad, but it's not bad. It's not boring. You know what I mean? It's entertaining in its own way. So for 18 minutes, it's not like this really just plodding, boring match. There's a lot going on that makes it entertaining to watch in retrospect, but it's not good. It didn't help anyone. It failed its cause.
Right.
I should note, so this is Steiner's first, hang on, I have it right here, first title match, world title match in 784 days, 112 weeks, and it'll be 26 months at WCW Mayhem. He fought Booker T in a straitjacket steel cage match in November 2000.
Jesus.
So he not had a world title on pay-per-view since then, which I believe is. I think he fought for the world title on the final Nitro, right?
Yeah,
well, he won it there, so he was champion. So, okay.
Yeah,
so Sutton's saying he last Booker. Challenged for it.
He beat Booker. Booker right. beat him in the, on the last night.
Okay, so he's saying that was his last title, the last time he challenged for the title, because yeah. then he was champion towards the end.
Yeah, the Flair just kind of flailing his arms, and they were trying, at least in the beginning, Hunter and Flair tried so hard to just keep the energy high, just trying to save the crowd from completely just losing their minds, and it didn't work. And, you know, Hunter was like, look, finally I have my stage. I think that was the whole thing throughout 2003. I have my stage. I want to put on, you know, matches like my idol, like Ric Flair. So he, you know, they're trying to come up with these NWA style storytelling matches. Problem is you don't have a guy like a Harley Race next in front of you, or a Sting, you know, or even a Luger would have put on a better showing here than this, you know, flaming bag of dog poo. It was not good. And I've always criticized Triple H's performance. It's not great. Steiner's is worse, but Triple H's is not great. And I still, though, go by the feeling that if Steiner had matches in this stretch, he'd been around for 2 months, and they didn't do anything with him. So by the time he gets an actual match, he's a freaking mess. And that's why I still think that had they had another guy on the docket and maybe had Steiner at WrestleMania, it would have given him a couple months to kind of get his feet wet again. And like you say, the build is fine. I'm not talking about the build. I'm talking about the fact that the match had happened at a time when he wasn't ready for a primetime match.
Well, they should have just given him some matches then.
I know. That's my point.
No, but they didn't need to extend everything back a month. He still had... It is, what's not Triple H's fault? The booking of the match certainly lays with him, and he was awful in the match.
But if Steiner had gotten some work in, then maybe those first 9 minutes might have gone a little differently. And those last, well, it was 18 minutes, right? 18, 14. So maybe the last, like, 10 minutes after the 8.5-minute mark would have gone a little differently, and we wouldn't have had such a stalling, rolling around, sweaty bastards fest in the last 8 minutes. That's what I'm saying.
My problem is still with the structure of the match, though. So even if Steiner was okay at the end, even if he's standing up fine and not dying, I still think it's a poorly booked match because there's no flow to it. Hunter's selling the back, then they give up on the back, and then Steiner gets beaten up a bit, and then all of a sudden he's unstoppable. The whole thing was weird. It was just they had like three different matches in one in 18 minutes, and none of them made sense the way with slotting in with each other.
Well, I wonder if they were trying to improvise, and there was just no saving it, and they still had, you know, 7 minutes to fill and didn't know what the fuck to do. I mean, all I'm saying is I understand that the match was there wasn't much to do in those last 8.5 minutes when they were both, you know, when Hunter kind of lost direction of what to do. He's no Flair in that aspect. We've come to that realization. Flair's trying to save this crowd from not totally leaving the building. And I think this match didn't need to be 18 minutes. It could have been, maybe it could have been like 11. It didn't have to be, I mean, I like one of your theories about, you know, him getting the shit beat out of him for 8 minutes and then he just brings the sledge and leaves. I'm more upset at the rematch, and we'll get to that next week. But this one, I'm like, wow, that was just comically funny. It was just comically bad. and you kind of move on from it. But I think what gets under people's goat is that here's a showcase. Triple H has his own. It's pretty much his show now. There's no other guys. He doesn't have to share the stage with Rock or share the stage with Austin. This is finally his slot. He is the top guy on this show. His first major title match, not counting, you know, Sean. I mean, Sean could wrestle a donut in for 4 stars.
Unless you're Steven Graham and Shy Gamble.
Well, yes, I know. And
then they would tell you the donut carried Sean to 4 stars.
Yes, of course. And
well, he didn't really sell the leg.
He didn't sell the jelly. And there you go. So all I'm saying is, I think you talk about how the structure of the match was poor. I'm correlating the fact that Steiner didn't get enough warm-up to make the structure of the match better. See, you're thinking one has something to do with the other, and I think one does have something to do with the other. I think that's where you and I are having a good debate here. You think regardless of what Steiner had done before this match, you thought the structure still sucked. I'm telling you that if Steiner had had some kind of something under his legs, a few matches here and there, the structure would have been different because it wouldn't have had to go that route of rolling around sweating because he couldn't fucking do anything except throw suplexes. That's all I'm saying. The fact of the matter is the match is garbage. What I'm saying is that had Steiner been in the shape, better shape than he was, I think the structure of the match would have been different. That's what I'm saying. That's where you and I differ. You think one has nothing to do with the other, and I think they do have something to do.
So many words for the broken heart. It's hard to see in a crimson love. So hard to breathe. Walk with me and maybe
this real match is a 4-star affair. Triple H hit a pedigree and Steiner was there working hard. Do the Scott colored glasses of this match?
Oh my god. I didn't say it was fine.
Pitch you gripping those red panties sitting in your recliner at home as the match was going on.
The Steiner recliner?
Yes.
I like the first line, so many words. I just heard that whole description and I'm still broken hearted. In any event. Triple H is still your world heavyweight champion. The match is an unmitigated dumpster fire, and sadly, they have a rematch. And you will not. There will be no rose-colored. There will be no Gorilla Monsoon glasses next month in Montreal. But we'll talk about that next week. There you go. Triple H is still your world heavyweight champion. The match ends in a DQ. The minute the bell rings, JR says, "If there's any situation where a rematch is needed, well, no shit. Do we really want to see one?" Suplex, wop, wop, wop.
And more appropriately explains what happened in the final 12 minutes of this match.
All right. Let's take a break because we need to cleanse ourselves of that mess.
You need to cleanse yourself.
I feel like, you know, when it comes to this show, I feel like I'm the Larry David to your Jerry. Like, I feed you all this excellent stuff that you're able to rip off fire back to the audience. I do, because if I don't say a lot of these things, you have nothing to bounce back on.
I mean, those were written on purpose.
Well, right. But if I don't say them, then there's nothing for you to...
Yeah, but you don't
say
it to set me up. You say it because you mean it.
Well, no, that one I knew you were going to say something back when I said clean up after this mess. Anyway, when we come back, we have one more title match, the WWE Championship on the line, and we have a complete 180 there. And then, of course, the Royal Rumble to decide who will be in Seattle for the whichever belt it is. First, a word and many, red tights and all, because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Return the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
All right, we're back here. Benny Hill and his friends are back in the barn. You can calm down a little bit. PlayStation.com, plenty going on. As we mentioned, you had Campbell's Vintage Vault previewing. Looked at that match we just talked about, the farce in Boston. And no, we're not talking about the Red Sox season. Seinfeld's got the series rewatch underway with three episodes in. Me, Aaron George, Andrew Flanagan, and Jordan Duncan going through each and every episode in the great show's history. And we're going to do little recaps of everyone for you. 2 week is our goal. So we'll see how long we can keep that going.
Mm-hmm.
Day 7 of the World Cup of TV Characters knockout round has been posted. We're into the brackets now. It's win or go home. 4 matchups per day. There's some big names out there, and there's some tight ones. Michael Bluth needs your support. He was over up on day 6, so head over there now. Get your votes in. Keep checking back every day because it's all we got a while to go through this knockout round, round 1. So be sure to keep an eye out as we move forward. Russell Sellers had his new hotness, his top comic picks for the week. We had Chad Campbell's binge-watching the G1 Climax. And we're not talking about Scott watching Triple H, Scott Steiner. We're talking about New Japan Pro Wrestling, their yearly tournament. He is up to night 2. He's binge-watching each and every night. He's going to have his thoughts on the card every morning there for you here at PlaySimulation.com. Dan McGinn had the Raw recap from this week. It was an interesting episode. We'll leave it at that. We did a Vintage Vault repost, Scott. Mm-hmm. August 4th, 1997, Nitro. Yesterday was the 17th anniversary of Lex Luger defeating Hollywood Hulk Hogan for the world title on Nitro, so check that out. Mm-hmm. Hard-traveling fanboys went off the page to look at Ninja Turtles, the next mutation, an awful series that is a prelude to the movie coming out this weekend. Mm-hmm. So Nick and Greg joined them as they recapped that very interesting piece of media there. We had a new episode of the Wrestling Culture Podcast talking TNA, G1, SummerSlam, and more. We had all your usual SmackDown recap. We had a new Goodwill Wrestling, which is an awesome, awesome, awesome podcast. If you have not listened yet, Will is joined by Charles and Chris Harrington, Mookie Ghana of WrestleNomics Radio here at PlaySimulation.com, and they looked at how to fix the WWE Network, and they gave some awesome, awesome comments. Well worth checking out. Mm-hmm. Well worth your time if you're a fan of the network and the promotion. Kings of Sport had a new episode talking about TNA, a new episode of the Steel Realtor Show as well, plus the High Spot. And all your other usual weekly pieces. Cowboy Goes to Class, look to SummerSlam 1991. And be sure to check out last week's Steve Corino show. Interviewed Greg the Hammer Valentine, talked about his early days in wrestling, his early feuds at Roddy Piper, Wahoo McDaniel, and much more. So check out Steve talking to Greg Valentine and everything else. PlaySimulation.com. If you want to write for us, hit us up at info@PlaySimulation.com, Facebook.com/PlaySimulation, and Twitter, Place2BNation.
Mm-hmm.
That be it.
Tremendous. PlaySimulation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Let's go back to Boston and get a new philosophy in life. All right. We go from one end of the spectrum to the other. The WWE Championship is on the line. Your champion. I'm so distraught, I'm not even going to play the music. I'm so upset. I'm not singing Air Supply either. Kirk Angel.
Hey, don't take it out on him.
Why does he get the better roster, damn it? No.
He didn't do anything.
No. Kurt Angle. I can't because my iPad's dead, and every time I play it on my phone, it sounds like Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. So.
All right, I'll take care of it for you.
So.
There you go.
Okay, there you go. All the single ladies in Coventry, they're happy. All right. Your boy is at the top of the Blue Mountain. I'm going to ask you this, and I'm going to set myself up, and I don't really give a shit. Did you ever see Dreamgirls?
No.
Okay.
I've seen Showgirls.
Oh, great. That's the Triple H Scott Steiner of dancing movies, but...
Hey,
only
Jesse
because
Spano.
You just played Beyonce and she's in it, and I didn't think she was very good in it. I like Jennifer Hudson better. I had it. It was on Netflix last night, so
racist.
I was just curious. Huh? You don't like Jay-Z's wife. You like that American Idol reject.
You like Otunga's wife better.
Yes. Otunga could kick Jay-Z's ass. all right. So Kurt Angle wins the title at Armageddon. And, of course, you know, the dipsy-doo dunkaroo happens. We talked about it during the Brock Lesnar match. He's now under... Paul Heyman's employee. What did you think of it? He's your boy. Did you think he needed the help?
No, but I was fine with it. Like, once I kind of realized where the story was headed, and it was really more about Heyman versus Brock, I was fine with it. I mean, at first, it seemed like a weird pairing. Like, they didn't. Angle didn't seem to need a guy like Heyman, but it worked out. So, yes, he came out with his new title, and as we mentioned, said he could have won without help from Brock, refuses the match. Benoit would win the title match over, win a shot at the title by beating Big Show. Angle announced Heyman was his agent and said Brock would never get that title shot. To give Angle some backup, Scott, while he's WWE champion on the 12/26 SmackDown, Paul Heyman gave Kurt a gift. It was a tag team called Team Angle. Two stellar young stud wrestlers that would dress like Kurt, back him up where needed. First, we have Shelton Benjamin. The All-American wrestler was from Orangeburg, South Carolina, had a 122-10 record as a wrestler in high school, was a standout in Minnesota. He signed to WWF in 2000. He was in OVW, was a multi-time tag team champion with two partners, first along with Brock Lesnar, and then with Red Dog, Jazz's real-life husband. He made his move up to the big time in September 02 and debuted on camera here. His partner is Charlie Haas. Haas had debuted in the pros in 1996 with his brother Russ. They won the multiple tag titles on the indie circuit. They joined with the WWF in August of 2000, continued the tag run in developmental territories in Memphis and Heartland. Tragedy struck on December 15, 2001. Russ Haas died of a heart attack due to a pre-existing condition. Yeah. Charlie changed his name to R.C. Haas, putting the brother and his name together, and wrote Huss on it. The Berserker came.
Berserker and a bum.
Wrote Russ on his taped forearms for the rest of his career. He continued boning up in developmental, including winning the HWA heavyweight title before debuting here. Yeah.
Huss. You were boning up when you weren't the Christmas gift. So what'd you think of these two guys? I think Angle having his own little group was pretty awesome.
Yeah, little mini-me's, little clones. And it was good. It was great practice for them to be in matches and angles with him as well to really kind of work their way up. So I thought it was really good. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good choice. And they were two really good wrestlers, two great studs. So it made perfect sense. So Benoit's push is strong here up to the Royal Rumble Challenge, kind of renewed. A crowd working hard to wake back up after that last disaster, and more high anticipation for this. Team Angle protects Kurt early on. I thought it was a cool idea for Stable, like we said. Team Angle gets tossed out, though, right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. We get some mat work and crisp offense from both early. The match really pays off everything from the fall with all the build. A lot of reversals, and they knew each other as being tag partners and feuding throughout the fall and winter. So I thought all that paid off here. Mm-hmm. Kurt clamps in a rare chin lock. Kurt keeps taking advantage of any opening. Benoit comes back with a series of German suplexes and a massive snot rocket. Kurt pops up with a belly-to-belly, catches Benoit up top. The crowd is back awake and into this. Kurt survives a crossface, an ankle lock, and a crossface again. A great mat battle as Kurt fights to survive. Angle breaks the crossface with an angle slam with a nice reversal there. Great near falls to start seep in here. Benoit hits his Germans, including a release, with Kurt flipping over, landing on his face. The crowd is super hot now as both guys unload a lot of energy and arsenal. Kurt reverses a crossface into an ankle lock, and the crowd's on the edge of their seat. Kurt gets a heel hook, and that puts down Benoit for good, and that puts over the ankle lock with the heel hook as an unescapable finish now for a while, too. Whenever Kurt gets desperate and needs to, he goes to that. Crowd is sad, but it was the right finish. Angle had to win to head towards Mania. Epic match. I thought it was Benoit's best match to date in the WWF. This is a couple you could argue, but in my eyes, this was his best so far. Awesome feud and match. Total 180 from the Raw match. Instant classic in my eyes. And a great standing ovation for Benoit.
One thing I want to point out first, and Chad points it out in his piece. I'm sure some detractors probably thought, well, you know, Benoit used like five Germans in a row or whatever. Let's really think about this, okay? Chris Benoit using like four straight Germans on an opponent is set up for the crossface, softening up the neck, softening up the shoulders. Scott Steiner doing four straight belly-to-bellies on Triple H is, I'm a gassed piece of shit, and I have nothing else to do. Common sense wrestling fans would understand that. The match is absolutely tremendous. The story in this match is who's going to tap out to their submission. And that, what, JR, maybe 3.5 minute stretch, 4 minute stretch of that match in the middle when Benoit puts on like three crossfaces in a row.
Yeah.
Is just fantastic. And all these rollings and the combination of Benoit, of Kurt trying to get out of the crossface, and then the last few minutes of the match when Benoit's trying to get out of the ankle lock is just pure pure storytelling. Who's the smarter guy? Who's the better submission wrestler? Who's the better wrestler, period?
And this built off so much of their ongoing feud, from their 0-1 matches to their 0-2 matches. It all crests here. And I could hear Stephen Graham in my head as I'm watching this. You know, it's not on his top 25 Rumble matches and everything else. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I don't break down matches like he does. But I was sucked into the match. I enjoyed it. I really liked it again on rewatch. And I was trying to watch it as critically as possible. I was really paying attention this time. I'm like, I'm going to look for these holes. I'm going to look for the flaws. And I really loved the match. I just enjoyed it.
The crowd was into it.
It went by quick.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I really
longer.
Liked it.
Yeah. Longer than the other one, not by much. The dumpster fire was 1814. This is 1948, so it's only like a minute and a half longer, but it felt shorter.
And like I said, and there's a difference between Benoit snapping off crisp Germans and Steiner stumbling through belly to belly.
Yeah, because there's a philosophy behind it. If you know Chris Benoit, he's softening up your neck and your shoulders for the crossface.
No, see, I mean, I'll give Steiner this. The belly to belly, like Chad said, the belly to belly makes sense for what he was doing because he's softening up for the recliner. We just never get there because they turned the match around and changed it all. So, I mean, I'm with Chad on that. Like, I get. To me, I don't want to take away from Benoit during the Germans. I want to add to Steiner doing the belly-to-bellies. Like, okay, I get why he was doing them. But he was also stumbling through them. Hunter's half-fast selling. And Steiner looking like he's about to pass out in the ring is different than Benoit snapping these off at a quick pace and rolling right into the next series of moves. So I think that's the difference to me, is execution.
Well, because you have two guys, I think it's also just being driven to succeed. And I also think there had to have been something backstage where somebody went up to them and said, look, you gotta save this, because I don't know what the fuck just happened.
I don't think anyone had to tell them. I think anyone watching that fiasco.
Yeah, I think they knew they had to save this before the Rumble started, because if there was a dead crowd for this Rumble, they were in deep shit. At least Brock. If anybody needs to thank the two of them, it's probably Brock Lesnar, because if this crowd was flat during his Rumble win, he was toast. So kudos to both of them. Do you think they are the best? How do I word this? Do you think that they are each other's best opponents ever? Has Kurt ever, in his time in WWE, did he have a better opponent than Benoit?
Maybe Shawn.
Taker.
It's tough. I mean Benoit has Eddie.
I don't know.
Jericho.
If you watch those, every match that they're involved in, whether they're on a team or they're against each other, I mean, are any of them less than 3.5 to 4?
No. I mean, you're definitely, it's definitely very possible. I can't think, sit here and think completely off the top of my head, but I think they're in the conversation for sure.
Yeah.
Do you think Benoit was established by this match? Did it make him?
Yes.
Because he drops quick kind of after this now.
There was other priorities, but. Yeah. Benoit was a guy the fans would always liked, so you could move him up and down. I think the standing ovation proved that, validated that. And I thought they were going to cut it out of the – when I watched it today on the network, because the match – Kurt's walking back with his guys, and then they do a commercial for the Anthology CD set. And I'm like – I thought, oh, I see what they're doing. They probably cut that part out. And they didn't. They just went back to it, and they get the standing ovation. I'm actually very happy that – WWE kept that in there and didn't edit it.
Do you think Benoit should have won?
No. No. Benoit's first world title win needs to be at a WrestleMania. Kurt needed to be established.
When did that happen? When did we get to the point where Benoit had to win at Mania?
Here. I think here.
Well, you said he shouldn't have won here because he had to win a Mania. So you mean before this match or after this match? At what point did you say this guy is a guy that needs to win a Mania? Because you wouldn't have said that in 2000. If he beat Rock and fully loaded for the title, everyone would have been, you know, happy pappy.
I think when he came back mid-02 and he established himself as a major player in the company, particularly on SmackDown with all these other great wrestlers, of those six, except for maybe Edge, I think everybody. If you had to go in order of popularity, if you had to rank the SmackDown six by popularity, I think Benoit's number one.
So Benoit wins
the title. The only guy that would compare to him would be Edge.
If Benoit wins the title Survivor Series, say he's the one that beats Brock, or say Armageddon, he's in Angle's role. Would you have been okay with that? Or would you have said at that point he needed to have won at Mania?
I think he still should have won at Mania.
Okay.
Yeah. But I agree with you on your thinking why Angle needed a win here, because we needed to establish. Although Brock Benoit at Mania, wow. That would have been pretty awesome.
Well, it almost happened.
Yeah. So I think the standing ovation he got at the end of the match told everybody in the back, all right, we got to give this guy deserves his moment soon. And I think that's, and I mean, he does kind of sleepwalk through the year, but he still has some pretty awesome matches. I think when they get to the end of 03 and you see a lot of maneuverings, and you see Raw kind of flat, I think that's when they switch over and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But we'll get there. But I think after this match, I think it's fairly established that if you're going to give Chris Benoit the moment that he's been waiting his entire career for, you got to do it on the biggest stage. Mm-hmm. You can't waste it on a secondary show or a lower first-tier show. That's just my opinion. And I think a lot of people thought that way, too. I think. But regardless of who won, I can't understand why anybody would not have this in their top five.
Top 25.
Well, that too. But higher than that. I mean, this match isn't even 25. This match, to me, if you rank it, I mean, there's different rankings. Greatest match ever? Well, there's a lot of those. Not a lot, but I would put this as the greatest match ever. Greatest WWE title match ever? That's one that can be fairly fought. Greatest Royal Rumble title match ever? Yes.
Better than Hunter and Cactus?
That one's subjective based on what kind of wrestling you like. Meaning, if you're a guy who's not a Attitude Era, brawling, weapons, chaos kind of match... Well, I could just say that if you don't like the match, you're un-American and racist, like you say. But no, they're close. But again, two different types of matches. And I've always said that. Those are like 1A, 1B because they're two different kinds of matches. Hunter and Cactus is a very different match than Benoit and Kurt. And it's clear as day. So I think a lot of it depends on your tastes as what kind of match you like. I mean, guys like you and I, we're hybrids. We like everything. But... those two are probably 1A, 1B for the greatest Rumble title matches ever. Greatest title match period. There's a few that are, you know, are in that debate as well. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have this in a greatest Rumble match list, you're on crack. I don't think it's defensible why you would not put this on any list of anything involving Rumbles, title matches, anything. I just don't understand. It's just my opinion. It's just the way that it's laid out. You got two guys who know how to do it, who told an incredible story, who used, and I think even coming off, well, let me ask you this, JR. I'm not playing devil's advocate here, but I will ask this, just curious to see what your thought is. Does this match look even better because of the flaming dumpster fire that preceded it?
Let's say
Steiner and Triple H was like, 3 stars. You know, really good. Stellar, but good. Does this match lose its shine because it's not having to save?
No, I don't think so. I think in a vacuum, this still holds up.
I agree.
I mean, it helps, but it doesn't make it great.
Okay, I was expecting that answer from you. I just wanted to put it out there for other people to think about while they're listening. Maybe that's some people's thinking that don't like this match. Maybe they think, oh, everybody only likes it because the match before it sucked. No, not in this instance, not at all. You've got a pretty good top flight match here. So anyway, Kurt Angle retains his title, and Benoit gets a standing ovation. We don't talk about Benoit this high up for quite a few months, but he deserves the stage. All right, we got a Rumble to do. Okay, here's your Royal Rumble. Winner gets a shot at either Triple H or Kurt Angle, depending on what brand you're on. There was no flexibility yet. We wouldn't toss that into the storyline for a while. So
no, we have a lot of fun facts to do. So why don't we? I'll do these quick, and then we'll get going. Some of them talk about debuts. So after Matt Hardy had jumped to SmackDown, became version one, he enlisted Shannon Moore as his number one MF-er. Mattitude follower, that is, Scott. Moore was a longtime friend of Hardy and member of Hardy's Omega promotion in North Carolina. In 1999, Moore had been hired by WCW at the request of Canyon, who had given the authority to hire a small army of cruiserweights to replenish the division. He'd be replaced in an entertaining boy band gimmick alongside Shane Helms and Evan Courageous, known as Three Counts. Their most memorable storyline came in 2000 when UFC star Tank Abbott became engrossed with their music and did his best to protect them while also trying to perform with them. They would splinter and feud throughout the dying days of WCW, and would provide some of the best matches the dying promotion put on in their final months. Moore inked a deal with the WWF developmental Tory HWA and brought up to the show in mid-2002. He would hook up with Hardy after toiling in the Cruiserweight division for most of the year. Bill DeMott, who enters this Rumble, is the former Hugh Morris. After spending the early part of 2002 plying his trade on the syndicated program Jacked, DeMott was injured in a motorcycle accident and had to take some time off. While healing, he signed on to be a trainer on Tough Enough 3. This would be the most exposure DeMott would obtain, and he cultivated his hard-ass personality and was often vicious and understanding with the trainees. He returned to the ring on the 11-23 Velocity and hit the big time on 12-5. He now went by his real name and was pushed as a monster heel, squashing low-card wrestlers. The push did not last long, and he ended up being a Velocity mainstay for the rest of 2003. This would be his final pay-per-view appearance. Despite being used as a monster heel, DeMott would decide to hang up the tights in the summer. He would defeat Canyon in his final match on the 6-14 Velocity. He would take over announce duties in Velocity in late 03 before reprising his role as trainer for Tough Enough 4. After Tough Enough ended, DeMott became a full-time trainer at developmental until early 07. This will also be the last time we see Bull Buchanan on pay-per-view. He was providing backup for John Cena's freestyle. That partnership would be short-lived. On the 116 SmackDown, Cena and B-Squared lost a match to Los Guerreros. Cena blamed B-Squared, smacked him around. He didn't take kindly and shoved Cena down. Cena's new running buddy, Red Dog, then ran through the crowd and took out B2. This is B2's final TV appearance. Lost a match to Red Dog in the 123 SmackDown, but it got cut out due to time constraints. On 126, Buchanan was released. His final pay-per-view record, 6-7. In the fall of 2002, Scott, Stacy Keibler began managing Test, took on the role of his marketing agent, began to reshape his image by cutting his hair, thank God, changing his tights, and becoming more fan-friendly. She even got him to refer to his fans as testicles. The term led to some funny double entendres, and the pairing actually got over for a bit. Things would be rosy for now, but get a little bit ugly as the year goes on. And actually, Scott, they were dating in real life at the time. Undertaker hadn't been seen since the Big Show tossed him off a stage the night after No Mercy. In the weeks leading up to the Rumble, various related videos began airing and featuring highlights of the old school gimmick. Rumors swirled that Taker was returning as the dead man here at the show, but he would show up as the American Badass, and many fans were disappointed. Chris Nowinski was a standout athlete at Harvard, including football, before graduating with a bachelor's degree in sociology. Competed at the first Tough Enough, finished second to Maven. Nowinski floated around the Indies briefly before being sent to developmental as Chris Harvard. Debuted on June 2nd, was partners with William Regal for a time. It was part in that awful tag team match we talked about from the July 8th Raw, where he teamed with Jackie Gaeta against Trish Stratus and Bradshaw. He was at Survivor Series getting beat up by Scott Steiner, teamed with D'Lo Brown before striking it out on his own here in the new year. And finally, Jeff Hardy had defeated Raven on the 113 Raw to earn a slot in this Rumble. So there you go. A lot of notes and news. And now we can just get right to the nitty gritty.
Yes. Number one in the Rumble was a guy who was trying to duplicate a feat he did 8 years earlier and win the Rumble at number one. And that was the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. At number two was a guy he was about to embark on an epic feud with, and that would be Chris Jericho. JR, how do these guys get one and two?
Well, Chris Jericho came out on the 1-6 Raw to talk about the goal of winning the Rumble, returning to WrestleMania main event. He was interrupted by Shawn Michaels, who bragged about being the only man to ever enter at one and win the Rumble. So he officially entered himself in the Rumble match and dared Jericho to enter as number one to prove he could match Michaels' feat. A week later, Vince came out and announced that Michaels had been chosen to enter the Rumble first, and he was making an over-the-top rope challenge where the winner could pick any number they wanted. Jericho won that match and chose number two so he could out-duel Michaels. So, they do start the match here. They have a little tease where Christian enters with Jericho's music, and HBK is distracted. Jericho attacks him from behind. And I love the story here with Jericho idolizing Shawn, and now he wants to put him out for good, was basically what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
Jericho
nut shots him.
Uses a chair, Michael's blades, and gets dumped out, and the crowd is kind of sad. I kind of stunk to see Shawn get out so quick, but I thought it was a necessary evil for what would become a great story.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. So Shawn Michaels eliminated fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And number three.
Disappointing. But.
Yeah, well, it was kind of a bummer.
Because, again, you still didn't know how many Michaels appearances we had in the tank, you know? It was, like, still kind of a mystery at the time.
Yes, that is true. It was still a mystery. So anytime you had a chance and it was cut off, you were very disappointed. At number three, the aforementioned debuting Christopher Nowinski. And he actually sat back and was going to let the two of them beat the snot out of each other.
Yes.
Number four was the returning Rey Mysterio. As you mentioned, he was coming off a knee injury.
And off to a hot start, too. He was flying around really
fast. Yeah, the first
fast.
Of what would be many knee injuries yes. throughout his career. At number five, one of the SmackDown six being Edge.
And he gets a good pop. Nice showdown early with Rey in there. And Nowinski was sneaking around ringside still waiting to enter. So I thought it was a good star power out of the gate. Jericho, Shawn, Rey, Edge. Like I thought it was a strong start here for the first five.
Yes. At number six was Christian, who actually came in when he came out earlier. I also want to mention he actually was dressed as Jericho. He had his red tights and his red little shirt on.
Still
there.
Looking awful with the hair.
Oh, the hair was still stringy and gross. Yeah.
And I thought it was funny. He hugs Edge and he wants to work together, and Edge just looks at him and then turns on him.
Turns and spears him. Yeah, it's pretty funny. At number seven, one half of your blue belt tag team champions, Chavo Guerrero.
This one note here, too. Uh-huh. A nasty bump. Nowinski was supposed to be victim to a double missile drop kick.
Yep.
He falls too early, and Edge like slides across his face as he lands.
Yes. I remember.
Pretty
I
ugly
that.
There.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, no, that was. You have to kind of give Nowinski the blame on that. He should have stood up and just eaten both, but he didn't. At number eight is Tajiri, who was feuding in the cruiserweight division. Number nine, as you mentioned, one of our debuts, Bill DeMott.
Really, last
match.
A last chance push for him. Yeah. I thought Jericho was a force here at this point. Dumped Rey, was looking very strong, and they were really pushing him. Probably the hardest he's been pushed since his run to Mania. Well, even since the fall, I'd say, fall of 01. Mm. Strong field, again, in the ring, too, not just star power. Chavo and Tajiri out there, so a lot of good work early on.
Yep, I agree. At number 10, we get a little hardcore as out comes Tommy Dreamer with a garbage can of weapons. I haven't seen him on camera a lot lately.
Yeah, short hardcore segment here. Tommy gets tossed pretty quickly, but he in the like 30 seconds he was in there, he was able to bash Jericho with a kendo stick. Mm. And Jericho has a gross eye cut from the stick over his eye.
Yes.
Just a really nasty gash.
Yeah, it was pretty gross. At number 11, as you mentioned, B2. Bull Buchanan, who obviously in his last appearance. I don't remember. By the way, while you were reading that, I forgot that Red Dog became Cena's new guy. I don't remember that.
It almost Cena felt a lot like like a poor man's Triple H from like early 97, where they were trying all these different things to see what worked, what would stick.
Yeah.
Remember he went through Mr. Hughes and went through Mr. Perfect, and then they finally found him China. It felt like that with Cena. Like, all right, we tried B Square. That didn't work. Let's try Red Dog. That didn't work. You know, they kept kind of cycling through ideas to see.
Yeah. Good good analogy, because I was watching the Thy Kingdom Come today, and he was talking about
Thy Chris Colo Come.
So I can't believe they named it that. At number 12 is the now relegated to mid-card status, Rob Van Dam.
Well, I thought it was pretty good here. So Jericho dumps Edge and Christian and hits a nice flurry, and the ring gets cleared. Again, super strong push. And it's stronger. You can argue stronger than when he was champ. So RVD was next, and I thought we got a cool little moment with them going one-on-one. So I thought that was pretty neat.
Yes. Yep. At number 13, the sensei of Mattitude, Matt Hardy, who, by the way, strongly dislikes mustard.
Yes.
That was your Matt. I
love this gimmick. It was so good.
Yeah, I do too. The Matt fact was for that night was that he strongly dislikes mustard. At number 16, wait a minute. At number 14, we had the other half of the blue belt champions, and that is Eddie Guerrero, Chavo's uncle. Number 15, Matt's brother Jeff, and they Jeff comes in and they actually have a little bit of a tit for tat there, Jeff and Matt.
And it felt new because it had been a while, and it was more defined than the 01 mediocre milquetoast split.
Yeah. Yep. And this is where Jeff is kind of he's kind of fallen off the rails and is a little bit reckless. The way he looks, the way he acts, and it really shows its ugly head at the next pay-per-view. At number 16, we see one half of 3 Minute Warning, and that's Rosie. Number 17, the leader of the testicles, and that is Test. who looked great with the short hair and
much better,
different tights, looking very
back on for another test push.
Yes, but you know what? The way he looked at the time, maybe this was legit. Finally,
yeah. The Shannon Moore was awesome here, by the way, too. So Matt keeps getting tossed out, and he would rush over, and like Matt would land on him and push off his back to get back in the ring, and he kept sacrificing himself to make sure Matt stayed in the ring. It was really good stuff there.
Yeah, well, it was very good stuff. At number 18 is the aforementioned John Cena, who's actually comes out in a throwback Houston Astros jersey.
In jeans, which was
jeans.
Funny to see. Yeah, and he wraps his way to the ring. So
yeah, and his jeans are like rolled up underneath. It's really stupid.
And starting a harder push for him.
Yeah. Yep. Number 19, one half of your Team Angle faction, that is Charlie the Berserker Huss. Charlie Huss comes in. Number 20 is Rikishi, and he actually gets a pretty good little run here.
His record 8th Rumble.
Yeah.
To date here.
And he comes in and
I don't know.
He almost does the butt splash to Matt and Shannon, but gets
still feels so blah.
He definitely seems out of place now. Seems out of place, no, too, but he really seems out of place now.
Vince, I really don't have time. I need to get back in this room here. This is really important to me, and I can't believe we're having this conversation at the hospital.
What do you mean? There's never been a better time, Brad. We just ran into each other. This is important business. We need to talk right now.
Yeah, how did this even happen? What are you doing in Pennsylvania? And I'm pretty sure Armento valeted our car when I dropped my wife off.
No, that wasn't Armento. It's Armento's birthday. He's at the strip club with Rotella. That wasn't him.
All right. Well, anyway, look,
I just happen to be here. Every Wednesday I come in and steal some latex gloves, okay? Don't ask why. You don't need to know what they're for. They're expensive, and it's just easier for me to come in here and just take them, okay?
Great. Well, enjoy yourself. It was great catching up with you.
Brad, while I have you here, we need to talk just for a minute about PlaceOfNation.com.
Okay.
You have a minute? You want to head down to the cafeteria? I'll buy you a hoagie.
No, we're gonna we'll have a. What's on your mind?
Do you subscribe to the WWE Network? Have you heard of that?
Yes. Day one subscriber.
You are. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that, Brad. Thank you for your support. But as you know, subscriptions are a little bit less than first expected. And by the way, this is off the record, please. I don't want this popping up with that douchebag Scherer, that idiot piece of garbage Meltzer, any of those other morons, Scolo and his Raw report, any of these idiots. And the USA deal wasn't quite what we expected. Hammer, I gave her the hammer, but apparently it's starting to lose its touch. We couldn't get anything done this time. Rod Perth really stuck it to me, that son of a bitch. I think it's because I didn't give him that slammy back in 96. And so, as you know, there may be some budget cuts. We've had to let guys go. Brodus Clay, that would hurt. Teddy Long, it was a brutal firing. I slit his throat on the way out the door. And, oh, hang on. Oh, what? You got a lozenge in that closet? Bring it. Excuse me. Those ice chips in your hand? Can I take some of those, please?
Yes, you can. No, you can't. Fine. Well, you've touched them now. I can't have you contaminated.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Anyway, what? What's wrong?
What? So the times are tough. Hammer, it ain't 1998 anymore. I got you. You want to talk business? I mean, how? I don't even know. Like, we have a chain of command here, Vince. I mean, did you talk to Glenn Butler?
Who?
Before you came to me? How about Chad Campbell? I don't fuck.
Campbell. Even I know he doesn't do anything for that site.
What about Steve Willey? Have you talked to Steve Willey?
No, I haven't. Who's Steve Willey?
You guys rang?
Steve, Brad, I'm really glad you're here. Listen, I need to get back in the room with my wife. I'm going to ask you to talk to Vince and hammer out whatever.
No, look, I didn't come all the way here to talk to this minion. I want to talk to you, Brad. Steve, go in the room with Brad's wife. Brad, let's go down to the cafeteria. I'll buy you an ice cream cone, and we'll talk things out.
Well, sure. I know Brad and his wife have been avoiding me lately. They've been avoiding their weekly appointments they've had, and they still have. You know, Brad's got his issues. He's trying to get over his breakup with him and Chad on the Brad and Chad show.
Brad, what's wrong? Okay.
You know, really, there's a lot of shit flying around.
Right, I'm sorry. I'm here unloading my problems on you, Brad. Why don't we take a walk? Steve, go in the room with Brad's wife. Look, Brad, I've been through 19 pregnancies, 17 kids, and a few abortions, and I haven't been there for all of them, and it's been fine. My children have turned out fine. Look at Stephanie. A+. I wasn't there. I didn't see her for the first 3 years of her life. It's fine. How many kids do you have, Woodling?
Zero.
Zero.
This is the first.
All right, that makes a little bit. Well, still, I mean, they're going to be around for a while.
Okay, Vince, you have 90 seconds of my time.
90 seconds, okay.
What do you need?
So, as you know, last year we signed that 20-year deal for me to subsidize your website.
Yeah, yep. It's been going good. I mean, your appearances have been, you know, fairly consistent. We had that big angle played out. You know, PAR was a little bit expensive, but, you know, you covered that for me, so I appreciate you flying him over for that whole ordeal.
You know, I got you Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino, and we're paying them and all the big money, and... the problem is now that with these budget cuts, I'm getting a lot of questions from the board of directors asking why I'm subsidizing this weird kind of niche entertainment thing you got going on. And
are you looking for me to cut costs here? I mean, what do you need me to do?
Do you have any superfluous staff we can axe? Duncan?
Jordan Duncan would be one.
Just looking at some of the names here on the site.
Mark Claire occasionally writes.
Oh, Claire! That mother! How do you get out of his grave that I put him in?
Libertarian propaganda. I mean, Vince, that's not your thing. Why don't we cut him?
Well, I'm looking through the list here. Dan McGinn. What's that? You never trust an Irishman. Ben Morse.
Well, yeah, let me tell you something, Vince. I mean, Ben's pretty valuable to the site. I mean, it would take a little bit of convincing. Keep going down the list.
Todd Weber. Is he right for you anymore? I haven't seen him around.
Nope, time can go. Okay.
What happened to Dustin Nichols? That guy was the bomb. I loved his shit. I'm still waiting for the next installment in that series. You told me it was coming.
You know, locker room chemistry is really important at the PTBN offices. So, you know, it didn't really work out. And some things were said, you know, passive aggressively. And I don't pull or deal with that shit. So, anyway, keep going. Who else you got?
My man, Steve Rogers.
Gone. Yep, okay.
Oh, well, that was easy. Andrew Waltman?
No, he's pretty good. I mean, good buddies with our buddy Greenhouse. I'm going to keep him on.
Nate Milton? I heard he likes TNA. He can go. Oh, Scott Keith! Okay. I burned his apartment down. I pissed in his lunchbox that day, and he's still farting around with his stupid website?
Yeah, I guess I forgot. I guess I think it was Rotella.
That guy eats well. How are you supporting that?
I know. I mean, Scott's an important guy.
Speaking of eating well, how much are you giving Kevin Kelly?
Too much. Too much, actually. Yes, too much.
That dude looks like he ate Michael Cole.
He made it on pay-per-view, though, aren't you? I mean, it's,
you know, oh, really? Whoa! Was this 1985? Good for him. Listen.
Very good.
Listen.
Great show.
Here's the deal, all right? I'm going to help you, Brad.
Okay.
I need to break our 20-year contract. I need the money. I got Chad Campbell right now. He's over at the Voices of Wrestling offices. You send your site over there. You're going to sign a lucrative deal. You'll make plenty of money. Your legacy will be intact. I can get out of this deal and move on.
Oh, man. I mean, there's...
What do you think, Steve Willey?
I don't know. You know, I've signed... You know, I like women. I think I like women. That's what I think.
You do? I love the women. Do they not like women? Wrestling.
Yeah, that's a good point. Steve, how's my wife doing, by the way? Thanks for popping back out. I really appreciate it.
Oh, she's fine. She's at 9 centimeters.
Okay, so, Vince.
I'm at 9 centimeters right now. How many inches is that, Willie?
That's about 3.5 there.
Ah, I'm at 900 centimeters. Armento, get the KY jelly with the gloves.
Vince, I appreciate your offer, but, you know, I deal with this all the time. You know, Ben Morris tries to renegotiate his contract with me. Absolutely not. I run a tight ship here. So the answer is no. We are not breaking anything. And, you know, we'll make some of those cuts that you talked about. Maybe we can revisit this in, like, 90 to 120 days.
I don't have 90 to 120 days.
You probably have 90, right? I mean, when's the next renewal period?
Brad, I've almost died once this year. I can't wait 90 days. Renewal period. You think these idiots are actually going to get out of their contract? That thing goes for life, baby. You ever heard of the NWO? That's like the WWE Network for life. Once you sign up, you're in. I got your information. How are you going to cancel that shit?
Or what you could do is, you know, like after people cancel, like 2 months later, you just randomly charge their credit card. Right?
What do you think I've been doing?
I know. And make them fight for it. You know, call your customer service. I heard they're pretty good.
All right. All right, Brad.
Listen,
look,
I got to go. I'm going to let you hammer this out with Steve,
Brad,
or whatever.
Brad, listen, go in there. Be with your wife. I will fax the paperwork over to your secretary, Dan McGinn, and we will have him sign on the line. Voices of Wrestling. You'll be all set. You can start there Monday. We'll be good to go. Okay? You go ahead. Go to the room. We'll take care of everything. Me and Willie, we're going to go grab lunch. We're going to go bang some broads, and we'll take care of this. Come on, Willie.
You
to
know,
the limo.
I don't know why Rotella and Armento are in that room, but get them the hell out of here, too.
Rotella, did you hit record yet? Well, as you know, we're big into documentaries on the Dirty Network, and we've been doing experimenting with kind of like birthing shows, and this is we're thinking maybe this could be.
You have been experimenting. Okay, Vince. Well, it was great talking to you. I'm gonna help you out here, and we'll be on our way. Good talking to you. And,
Brad, hang on. Before you go, as a gift for the newborn, I put together this playlist. It's the best iPod playlist you'll ever hear. Give it to your wife. Put it on in the hospital room, and it'll soothe her during the process. Here, have these ice chips back, please. Steve, take these. Give them to Brad's wife. Make sure she's taken care of. And then, Steve, you meet me in the limo. I got two chicks and Jeff Hardy waiting out there. He's got the face paint on. He's got the Willow mask on. We're good to go.
All right, Brad, she's crowned, and she's all yours.
What, is Jerry Lawler in there, too? Brad, hit play on the playlist. Hurry up. Eclectic mix on his eye. I think it's more eclectic than your Spotify list.
That takes a lot too.
Yeah.
If you can go from if you can do something other than going from Air Supply to ABBA to Guns N' Roses, Vince is the guy that could do it.
I think I think Brad handled it well though.
Yes, he did. Yes, nice job, VKM. All right, back to the Rumble. We last left with a Samoan, and we pick up with a Samoan as number 21 is Rikishi's brother,
son,
cousin,
nephew,
something like that. Jamal, the other half of 3 Minute Warning.
I think I'm looking at Rikishi's son right now, Jabba Chamberlain.
Wow. At number 22 is Kane, who mentions earlier in the show, JR, he was talking with Rob Van Dam, who, by the way, they're kind of starting to work as a tag team at this point. And he mentions that 2 years earlier, he went for he set the record, went over for an hour, eliminated all those guys, etc.
I thought the match was getting a little stagnant here. I mean, it had good names of wrestlers, and it stayed interesting, but we're not really going forward. We're kind of just stuck in neutral. But a very strong feel. The ring is packed when Kane gets in there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. At number 23, the other half of the Team Angle seconds to the ring, because they don't really officially have their tag team nickname yet, and that is, of course, Shelton Benjamin. At number 24 is the American...
Sorry, I missed it.
Oh, yeah. At number 24 is the American Dream, Booker T.
Yeah, baby. Coming down to the ring, we're going to stay here and we're going to fight in the room.
You should play that, the beginning part more, because it sounds like he says, we're going to go to the John.
I am a John. So Booker gets a hot push, tosses Eddie and a few others, and then Shawn Michaels shows up, goes right at Jericho, works over some other guys, and tests, eliminates Jericho, and a great feud is brewing as Jericho's been screwed in an awesome push, and I argue, again, the strongest push he's received in a year. Yes. He looked great here, and they're really brewing up something good with him and Shawn.
Mm. Yes, I agree. At number 25, the A-Train, who had been working with... He'd been working with nobody, I guess. He was on his own.
Well, still loosely affiliated with Show and Heyman.
Yeah. In fact, didn't they do something with Show? Oh, no, that was... I'm thinking of him and Boss Man. That was on the network the other day. At number 26 is Maven.
Yeah. It's been a long, far removed from the 2002 Rumble.
Yes.
But they do a little callback later. We'll get to in a minute.
Yep. At number 27 is Booker T's former tag team partner, and that is... Were you a little upset? Because I was thinking at this point, like, oh, the tag team's done. Is he gone? That's what I was a little nervous. Because I liked Goldust. I liked him.
Yeah, me
run.
Too. And he'll end up staying pretty relevant for a little bit.
Well, because we get a great skit with him in a couple months on Raw. At number 28.
I just want to mention quick here. I thought much better showing for Booker and RVD than the year before. And they needed it now more than ever. They were desperate for star names. So I thought it was good. That was a good choice for them to do here. So, and the Team Angle also gets hot, starts tossing some guys are working as a unit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. I'm glad that the second half kind of picked up a little bit because it was a little flat, like you said, for a few minutes.
Well, too, if you remember in the 02 Rumble, RVD and Booker just awful, awful showings. They both came out late and barely lasted in the ring.
Lasted
for
like 5 minutes. Well, that's because they had all that. Obviously, this Rumble does not have that much star power. I mean, we don't have Perfect. We don't have Austin. We don't have a bunch of different guys. We don't have Triple H in it. At number 28 is one of the new single studs on Raw, and that is, of course, Batista, fresh off his win over Kane at Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
At number 29, the guy who won his slot earlier in the night, and that was Brock Lesnar, in at 29.
And the heavy favorite at this point just starts running through guys.
Oh, yeah. I think it was... Well, I'll ask that question in a minute. And then finally, at number 30, making his big return, would not be the last time in his career that he would come in at 30. And he does not come in with the gong and pallbearer and urns or anything like that. And that is The Undertaker. Still comes in on his Harley.
You're going down.
People were, I think, kind of let down. There were a lot of dead man rumors. And
yep, there were a lot
I remember definitely thinking he was coming back as a dead man here, the way they were kind of teasing it. And he just rides back out as himself. So I thought the big men really started to take over the match here. Good callback to Rumble 02 with Maven and Taker, where Taker just beats the shit out of him and throws him out of the ring. Final four, all hosses. And I remember fans were upset at the time, thinking all the small popular guys have been dumped, and you have Batista, Kane, Taker, and Brock. It's like we're right back to want the big guys again, Taker and Kane, despite them being pretty popular. Brothers
I had no problem with it.
No? Okay.
I had no problem with it.
I thought it was a good
show. You've got a young guy. You've got Batista, who's young. I mean, he's...
Yeah, but no one really liked him at this point. It's not like
nice to test. But they did have the guts to test new waters with new guys. You got
to
take
I don't think it would have killed him to maybe have Booker in there instead of Kane, you know? Just to mix it up a little bit.
It's nice to have anybody except Kane.
Yes.
So
good showing and respect for Batista, though. The Rumble, I thought, really petered out. It was a stacked field, but I don't know if you agree with this. No really memorable spots or moments after Michaels and Jericho stuff. Like, that was the only real memorable... Like, it was a good Rumble. It was solid. Nothing bad, but nothing memorable. So Taker hits a tombstone on Brock. Batista comes back in and ends up costing Taker. Brock moves on to Mania. Taker's pissed, but kind of begrudgingly nods to Brock. Again, a good Rumble, not a standout. Nothing bad, nothing wrong with it. Just nothing... There's no like, oh yeah, the 03 Rumble, that was this Rumble. You know, it's really just to me remembered for Brock and for Shawn and Jericho.
Yeah, I think it was just a lot of inside stuff and in-ring stuff. There wasn't any like Kai and Tai smacks their face on the ground and that kind of stuff. No, that stuff definitely did not happen. So, yeah, it was a little dull in that aspect. So, but we go down to the last four, and Taker gets a taste of his own medicine as he wants to kind of start. He eliminates. I think Kane eliminates Batista. They try to do the little alliance, and then, you know, Taker gets hoodwinked at the end after he hoodwinks Kane. Not a lot of long stretches of guys in terms of time. So this is a pretty fast Rumble, don't you think?
Yeah. Yep.
Because, I mean, Jericho was in the longest, and he was barely in 40 minutes. And he was in number two. So technically, if you add, even if he was number one, so that means it was a much shorter Rumble than usual.
Yeah. And again, no great Iron Man performance. Jericho gets the longest time, 38 minutes. He was very good at six eliminations. So this is really his Rumble in a way, him and Brock. I mean, to me, those are the two standouts. Everyone else is kind of there. Bull Buchanan's shortest time at 24 seconds.
Right.
So, decent, nothing crazy. Let me quickly read Patrick Maloney's notes,
ahead.
And then we'll wrap up here. He said, Brock was crazy over, quick into his face turn. People were chanting his name, walking into the building. First belly-to-belly on show got a pop equal to when Brock did it at Survivor Series. Nathan Jones vignette got a crazy pop. It was very well done. It got me and my friends pumped to see this guy. Awful Tori and Dawn match. Thankfully, I believe this is the blow-off. The crowd knew these two divas that could not work. They were ready to cheer for Steiner. Nobody had any idea what was going to happen there. Crowd turned on the match like unlike anything I've ever seen live. Started so promising, but Steiner was obviously close to done physically. Should have been a 10-minute destruction of Triple H before Triple H got himself disqualified. Steiner had trouble getting off the mat a few times. Really embarrassing. The crowd let them know. Crazy how Steiner quickly fell off, and by backlash, he's already a heat guy. Benoit Angle brought us back, thankfully. Incredible match. I believe the apron DDT makes his debut here, and it was vicious. It was in this time frame, nobody could touch these two guys. I think the crowd, and certainly my group, show this match extra love due to what we had just seen. So there you go, Scott. This is your theory. Angle holds onto the ankle lock like a rabid animal and debuts the heel hook. The standing ovation for Benoit after the match sucks to think about now, but was an awesome moment at the time. Huge pop for Shawn Michaels at number one. They sense Michaels may be back after he gets eliminated by Jericho, but there's still some doubts because the way he got dumped got me fired up for Mania. And I knew he'd be back for good. Did it find it weird that Test was now still a heel, was the one that tossed Jericho? Booker, RVD, and Kane were all faces who could have tossed him. Not a huge thing, but something I noticed. From my seats, I thought knew something bad happened to Chris Nowinski on that failed double dropkick. Big pop for Dreamer, bringing the weapons in. Tiny ECW chance. After all he dealt with, Rob Van Dam was a huge fan favorite and was beyond the point of making a mark at this time, but the crowd was into him big. Dead silent during Cena's rap. I remember like it was yesterday. The gimmick is fairly new and no one knew what to make of it. Booker was popular with the live crowd. The Spinneroonie was so over. For years, I thought the Rumble itself was bad from star power, but looking back at it, I was wrong. Michaels, Jericho, Ray, Eddie, Edge, Booker, Benoit, Booker, Brock, Kane, RVD, Batista, Undertaker, Jeff, and Cena. Pretty stacked. So disappointing that Undertaker didn't come back with a new look. We were pumped, but we're hoping for the Dead Man or something different. Odd botch, it doesn't look as bad as I remember, when Brock lifts Taker in the air and drops him on the top rope, and he falls and purposely saves Taker. I remember it looked worse live. Big pop for Brock. Odd ending, though. It was never followed up for Batista, essentially costing Taker the match. I wonder if anything was planned there. I think Batista went down with an injury not long after. I enjoyed rewatching this show. So thank you, Patrick. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.
Thank you, Patrick. Yes.
So overall, Scott, I had fun watching it. Again, the Rumble solid. Benoit angle was awesome. And Triple H Steiner was funny to watch in its own right.
Right.
The rest of the show, fine. Is it a standout Rumble? No. Is it a bad Rumble? No, not by any means. So definitely just a solid, like a B-minus kind of show.
Yep. Yep. B-minus, C-plus. Yep. So there you have it. We are one pay-per-view away. And we get a, wow, do things really change
yes.
in the company? Again, ebbs and flows. And from this pay-per-view to next week's vault
yeah,
in Aaron George's backyard, then you see some serious weird star power changes. And at the moment, you don't even know what to make. You don't even know what a WrestleMania card would be at this point.
Right.
But after No Way Out, wow.
Yeah, things would change quickly.
Things would change drastically. So there you go. So there is the 2003 Royal Rumble.
All right. So we'll be back separately later this week. You have Main Event. Who's mm-hmm. on this week, Scott?
We have three of the Core Four. And guess what? Another debut, JR. Joining us for the first time ever, Chad Campbell will be on the Main Event this week. He'll be replacing JD. So it'll be Ben, Reish, Mr. Willie, and Chad Campbell on Main Event this week. And
Chad,
we may actually...
with Reish on there?
We'll certainly try. Well, without JD, at least some of us can breathe. If the two of them together, forget it. It's their own show. But we will... and I'm not kidding, we'll talk some TNA.
Okay. This week on Kevin Kelly, we have Dale Arnold as our guest. He's a co-host of the Holly mid-show with Michael Holly and Dale Arnold on WEEI. He does the pregame stuff for the Boston Bruins and a diehard wrestling fan. You can follow him on Twitter, Dale E. Arnold. So he's very excited to be with us. We're very excited to have him. And again, we'll talk TNA. We'll talk Duty Network as well. So a lot going on for me and Kevin to talk about. Me and you will be back next week. A little bit of a screwy schedule, though. Just to let everyone know now, we're going to be recording, I believe it's Wednesday, Thursday?
Wednesday, Thursday next week. Yep.
So Wednesday night, we have Listomania back. We're going to go through July, August pay-per-view cards finally.
Yeah.
And then Thursday night will be No Way Out 2003. So I'm going to be have some business I got to attend to early in the week. So Wednesday, Thursday next week. So
One more thing before we go. This Sunday, this weekend, the Doctor and I will be recording our next episode of Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. We've got a very secret special guest that I'm not going to announce until we're on that night. But get your tweets, P2B, Extra Point. Let's fire it up. Send us your tweets. We had a nice discussion about the Baseball Hall of Fame. Any questions you have, any tweets you have, send them to us, P2B, Extra Point, or email us, extrapoint@placetobenation.com. As we'll be recording this week. So just want to get it out there.
Okay, and also be sure to check out the SummerSlam Rewind series.
Mm-hmm.
First one was up 2005. You, Graham Cawthon, and Dan McGinn did a great job there. We have four more with all different panels coming over the next few weeks, and a special episode as well where a little SummerSlam ranking goes on. So we'll see those in the coming weeks. So be sure to tune in. We got some really cool guests and a lot of fun there. So for Scott, I'm Justin. We'll talk to you Wednesday on the Kevin Kelly and Main Event shows. And then next Wednesday, we'll be back with a little bit of pay-per-view ranks and a Listomania card build. So until then, take care. We'll talk to you next week.
I think VKM went lonely his playlist.
I think he went over the borderline tonight.
He's got red tights, too. And you weren't the Christmas gift.
at the rain. A little out of touch, little insane. It's just easier than dealing with the pain. Runaway train, never going back. Wrong way on a one-way track. Seems like I should be getting somewhere.